Rally the others, Decimator Prime, he growled. There's red work yet to be done. Aye, Lord Castellant, Maccus said, hastening to obey. Grim watched him go, and turned to see Morbus making his way towards him, accompanied by a number of others. Zavaclius and Altrades walked with the Lord Relictor as he stalked through the wreckage of battle, his reliquary staff glowing softly with a silver light. We must redress our lines, Grim said. The enemy have been beaten here, but they will return in strength. We must find a proper defensive position, as well as another realm gate.
Wait! Look!
Zavaclius said, pointing towards the slopes below the Tor.
Look!
Grim caught sight of a glow moving through the smog-shrouded reaches below. It grew in intensity as it wound through the trees and the shattered remnants of the cursed menhirs, and Grim became aware of the sound of creaking wood and rustling leaves.
Sylvaneth, Morbus murmured.
Grim knew he was correct. He had glimpsed the treekin often enough since arriving, and knew the sound of them well. Like a forest caught in a windstorm, the march of a warglade was an eerie chorus of creaks and groans.
Yes, but are they coming as allies or enemies? Grim said.
Talon growled softly and snapped his beak. The Griffhound sensed his master's unease, and Grim reached down to stroke the animal's feathered ruff.
Easy, my lad. Easy.
We should take up a defensive position, Altrades said, one hand on the hilt of his rune blade.
Grim shook his head.
Too late for that, he said. They're all around us. Can't you hear them?
All I hear are the trees creaking in the wind, Altrades said.
Grim snorted.
There is no wind, he said.
He turned his attentions back to the light, and realized that he could make out figures within it. The tall, unnatural shapes of dryads stalked forward, carrying something. A throne of tangled branches and stiff vines on their shoulders. The glow emanated not from the treekin, but instead from the figure slumped on the throne. A figure that was not unfamiliar.
Goddess, Zavaclius whispered.
Grim started.
Goddess,
he said in disbelief. He took a step, then another.
Goddess,
he said again, unable to believe his eyes. A slow, flat smile spread across his face as he descended to meet his Lord Celestant.
You have no idea how glad I am to see you.
Chapter 5. The Despised One. Torglug, the Despised One, looked out over the glade of horned growths and heaved a sigh.
Yeah, the rats are failing. Gluhack is failing. Spume is failing. Only Torglug stands, Grandfather.
Down below, fungus-riddled trees shed their bark as the rot fog of the Skaven faded. The master of the Brotherhood of the Red Boil, the plague priest, Kratzik, was dead, squashed flat by a vengeful tree lord. Something, maybe, to be thanking them for, Torglug thought, as he leaned on the haft of his axe and stared out at all of the nauseating green. He didn't care for the Skaven. They were too tricksy by half, and always seeking an advantage over their betters.
Not Torglug alone,
a harsh voice hissed. The Despised One didn't turn.
You are still living then, Vermalanx. I was thinking you were dead at the Gaiatract Fen,
Torglug said. The Blightflies had brought word that one of the Lightning Men had killed the Rat Demon at the Gates of Dawn, when boisterous Bolothrax had underestimated the hardiness of their enemies, with predictable results.
I'm harder to kill than that, Woodsman,
the Vermin Lord said, as he crouched atop the shattered standing stone behind the Chaos Champion. The Rat Demon used the name by which he was known in Nurgle's Manse. The demons there called him Iron Hood the Woodsman, for he had hacked down life trees by the hundreds in order to better fuel the blessed decay spreading from the open gates of Grandfather's garden.
Your servants are not saying the same,
Torglug said. Even as the lightning men had silenced the dirge horn, the Treekin, led by the pestiferous Lady of Vines, had launched a long-anticipated assault on the glade of horned growths. Now the lightning men were readying themselves to march anew, though just where he couldn't say.
My servants are a fecund folk. You have no need to worry on their account,
Vermalanx hissed.
And in any event, enough of them remain to see Nurgle's needs in this bitter place. Your own Blight Kings suffered below as well. Look to them rather than mine.
My warriors are being very hardy, Rat King. Hardier than your vermin,
Torglug said. He hefted his axe and set it on one wide shoulder as he turned to face the vermin lord. The rat demon was larger than the despised one, a thing of rangy muscle and mangy hair. It clung to the stone, fleshless head cocked, and eye sockets glowing with a sickly light. Its tail lashed at the implied insult.
And hardier especially than your drowned men's spume,
Torgug continued, looking past the stone and its occupier. Vermalanx hissed and turned. Several figures made their way through the ring of broken stones and heaps of piled bodies. Guttrot spume, tentacles coiling in agitation, spat a salty oath at Torglug's words.
At least my Black Kings fought an army. Yours fell to a lone warrior,
spume growled. He swung his axe out and shattered a nearby stone.
One not even Bolothrax could bring low,
said the sorcerer Slaugoth. His jowls wobbled in amusement.
I should have liked to have seen that great bowl of jelly waddling after our silver-skinned friend. Old Bolothrax has never been run so hard in his life, I'll warrant.
The master of the Rotfane chuckled at the thought.
You are finding this funny, Maggotfang?
Torglug demanded, turning his bleary-eyed glare on the sorcerer. He threw out a hand.
They're ruining things, these newcomers. How soon until they're coming for your Rotfane, or the world pimple?
The lightning men had come far, or so buzzing Blightfly and scurrying Poxrat had claimed. They had fought their way through the quagmires of Rotwater Blight from the Gyratract Fen. They had slain fat old Gablor, the toad dragon at the Lake of Screaming Reeds. They had survived the horrors of the Grove of Blighted Lanterns and the Greenglow Lake before they had shattered the Dirge Horn atop Profane Tor. And now the vile Treekin had been roused to war. It was as if the realm of life were preparing itself for a final battle. Foolishness. Arrogance, Torglug thought.
Why do they fight? Can they not see that the grandfather only wishes to take care of them? To take away their pain, their uncertainty?
He shook his head. He had fought as they fought once upon a time. He did not like to think of that time, for it shamed him to remember how he had resisted grandfather's kindness. He had been ungrateful, rude even. His grip on his axe tightened, and the ancient wood creaked as if in pain. But the grandfather had opened his eyes and made him see that the world was not as he had believed. And with each day that followed, Torglug tried to earn the kindness and patience that the grandfather had shown him. His axe had reaped glory for his new patron. He had poisoned the life wells he had once fought so hard to defend, and brought the blessings of pestilence to his people in their ignorance. And soon his past transgressions were but a thing to be chuckled over by both disciple and divinity. He knew, deep in the core of him, that the lightning men represented something dangerous, something that even the grandfather feared in his way, a power long forgotten, rising anew. Drums sounded in the deep realms, the skies boiled with strange lightning, and the whole of creation seemed to be holding its breath. None of the others seemed to understand, which only made it all the more infuriating.
Be at ease, despised one. You're all children of the garden.
Morbidex Twiceborn gurgled, stroking the mottled hide of his pox maggoth. The Twiceborn resembled nothing so much as an overlarge nurgling, squeezed into rusty armour. He grinned toothily into the face of Torglug's annoyance.
Some days you just have to laugh.
And some days of her being serious, Twiceborn, Torglug growled.
His axe dropped from his shoulder and embedded itself in the soft loam at his feet. Morbidex's Magoth shifted uneasily, and the big beast gave a grunt of warning. Torglug glanced warily at it. The Magoth was like some unholy combination of ape, plague-bearer, and giant, with a temperament to put all three to shame.
You're silencing that beast or else, Torglug said.
Easy, Triple Tongue,
Morbidex murmured. He patted the monster's fang-studded muzzle.
It didn't mean it, my sweet.
He looked at Torglug.
Did he?
Torglug grunted and placed his axe back on his shoulder.
Now is not the time for laughing. You are thinking maybe the Glot King will be so amused?
And who are you to speak for us, then, woodsman?
Otto Glot said. Spinning his scythe like a child's toys, he stepped out from the trees, trailed by his brothers. Ethrak leaned on his staff, his robe stiff with grime and his face hidden beneath a cowl. Gurk shoved a tree over as he followed Otto and Ethrak, his enormous lumpen features slack with disinterest.
Think you're the wormy apple of grandfather's eye now, despised one. You haven't found the hidden veil any more than we have, so don't go getting ideas above your station.
Torglug glared at Otto but said nothing. He did not like the brothers, but he knew better than to challenge them openly. Otto scratched his chin and grinned. Then he gave a satisfied sniff and gestured to his brother Ethrak.
Now that we're all here, any ideas what Sigmar's whelps may be looking for? Second most beloved sibling?
Same thing we are, brother from my mother, Ethrak said with a shrug.
Torglug grimaced beneath his helm. The hidden veil, he thought. The secret bower where the so-called Radiant Queen, Alariel, had hidden herself away when Grandfather's grip on her kingdoms had become too much for her frail soul to bear. He, the Glotkin, Slaugoth, and a host of others had spent centuries searching for it, even as they warred with the ferocious Treekin and the few remaining free tribes of Giran. It had become something of a game for them, all except Torglug. He knew Grandfather's mind better than any, and he knew how serious a matter Alariel's capture was, whatever the Glots thought.
Yes, kinsman mine,
Otto countered, brushing flies from his open gut.
Even Gurk knows that, and he can't count to one, bless him.
He reached up to pat the muscular arm of the third Glot brother, who loomed behind him.
Since we don't know where that is, it might behove us to learn, don't you think?
I'm open to suggestions, Otto,
Ethrak said. He looked at Torglug.
What about you, Geronite? What sort of ideas are percolating in that sour brain of yours?
Torglug hesitated. Then, with a grunt, he gestured to Vermalax.
The rats, he said. Let them be earning their keep.
Vermalax hissed, startled. Then, slowly, he nodded.
Yes, yes, my folk can do that. I know just the rat,
the Verminlord murmured. If Barebone could take on a cunning expression, Vermalax had one. The rat meant treachery. They couldn't help it. It was in whatever passed for their blood. Torglug extended his axe so that the edge just brushed the Verminlord's chin.
You're thinking carefully,
Torglug said, his voice deceptively mild.
No, no, Torglug. No need to threaten our furry ally,
Otto said, stepping forward, his scythe held lengthways across his shoulders.
I'm sure he'll do just what we ask. Won't you, my fine bear-tailed friend?
Vermalax hesitated. Then he nodded.
Of course. Yes, yes. We all serve the Great Corruptor, do we not?
Torglug lowered his axe. Despite his suggestion, he didn't trust the rat demon to do anything but seek its own advantage. He didn't trust any of them, in fact. They were all competing for the grandfather's affections in their own way. But only one of them was truly worthy.
And soon,
Torglug thought,
I will prove it.
Chapter 6 A Soul Returned. Tegris of the Sainted Eye, Prosecutor Prime of the Hallowed Knights, stood at the top of Profane Tor and looked down into the clearing at his newly returned Lord Celestant and the host of Stormcasts who surrounded him. "How can this be?" he murmured. He wondered still if it were an illusion. It would not be the first such shade that had appeared to lure unlucky Stormcast to their doom. And surely this was not truly Gardas, sitting upon the Dryad-born throne like some Gyronite saint of old. "Aetius, Solus, are you seeing this?" he asked his companions. "Hard not to, given the clamour," Solus said. The Judicator Prime of the Hallowed Knights was a man of few words, who had an internal serenity that Tegris could scarcely fathom. He sat on the bole of a toppled tree and ran a cloth across the gleaming blade of his gladius. His bolt-storm crossbow sat at his feet. He and Aetius had, along with Tegris, volunteered to oversee the retinues engaged in destroying the foul icons and symbols that littered the top of the Tor. None of it could be left standing, and the air rang with the sounds of the retributors' hammers and the decimators' axes, as they smashed idols and chopped apart the crude gibbets that had once hung from the hag tree.
"We cannot be him. It must be a trick," Aetius said.
The Liberator Prime was not a man to whom trust came easily.
"No one, Stormcast or otherwise, returns from the realm of chaos."
He tightened his grip on his hammer.
"But it is," Tegris said.
"Grim and Morbus are down there already, with Zavaclius and Ultrades." He looked at his fellow Stormcasts.
"We should be down there as well."
Ever since Gardas's disappearance in the final moments of the battle for the Gates of Dawn, Tegris had wondered if there was anything he could have done differently to have prevented what happened, and had come to no good conclusion. Nonetheless, he had been unable to shake the sense of his own failure. He had not been fast enough, observant enough. Somehow, somewhere, he had failed his Lord Celestant. But now Gardas had returned, and Tegris felt angry, confused, joyful.
"After you," Solus said.
He extended his gladius and peered down the length of the blade.
"If it is him, and not some trick of the light, he'll find us in his own time."
He looked at Tegris.
"But then, you've never been the patient sort, Tegris."
Tegris laughed.
"No."
He looked at the Liberator Prime.
"Aetius?"
"Someone must stand sentry,"
Aetius said, gesturing to the still smoking remains of the dirge horn.
"Gardas or no, I'll not shirk my duty."
He hesitated, and then added,
"But Solus is right. You are not so bound."
He looked at Tegris, and the Prosecutor Prime could see the unspoken plea in the other man's eyes. Aetius rarely saw eye to eye with his fellow commanders in the warrior chamber, but he was their brother nonetheless, bound by oaths and bearing the same reforging scars on his flesh. And he too had known Gardas, and flourished under the ever-patient Lord Celestant's command.
"You're right,"
Tegris said, clapping Aetius on the shoulder. Then, with a snap of his great wings, he was hurtling out over the Tor. As he left the ground far behind, he was tempted, as always, to simply keep flying, to rise and swoop forever, lost amongst the untold glories of the heavens. But the green skies of Gyron were not the blue horizons of Azir, and there was no peace to be found in these clouds. Blight flies and worse things choked the air even now. Where the servants of the ruinous powers went, the world sickened and changed. Tegris had seen it often enough, and as a result was always ready to cast down the worshippers of the dark gods wherever they were found. But in order to smite the foe, one first had to find him, a skill which Tegris had honed in the Nihiliad Mountains during the cleansing of Azir. He had rained blazing arrows down upon the chaos warbands that had infested the crags and exposed their positions to Sigmar's armies. Those had been good days. He had learned his true purpose there, swooping through rumbling thunderclouds to bring fire and fear to the enemies of the celestial realm. Indeed, he had been so good at it that Sigmar himself had offered Tegras a place as one of his trusted hunter-assassins, a high honour for any Stormcast. But Tegras had refused it. His place was with his warrior chamber. He swooped low over the crowd of Stormcasts gathered about the foot of the Tor, huddled in the cleansing light of Loras Grimm's lantern. With a snap of his wings, he dropped from the air to land in a crouch before the newly returned Lord Celestant. As he stood, other Stormcasts backed away. "Is it you, my lord?" Tegras asked as he stepped forward. Gardas turned towards him, and Tegras felt his heart swell as he examined the face of the man before him. Gardas held his helm beneath his arm, as if to reassure his fellows of his identity. Then, is that not what Gardas would do? Would he not reassure us and speak kindly to us? Some maintained that Gardas was too soft-hearted to lead, but Tegras knew the truth of it. Sigmar had zealots aplenty, but the Stormcast Eternals must be more than swords. They must be heroes. And that, Gardas surely was. "If it was not, I expect you would be the first to divine it, my friend," Gardas said. He extended his hand. Tegras hesitated, then clasped his Lord Celestant's forearm in a warrior's greeting. Gardas pulled him forward into a brief embrace before releasing him. Tegras peered into Gardas's eyes. "Where did you go, Steelsoul?" he asked. "What did you see?" "The gardens of Nurgle, my friend. And horrors without end," Gardas said softly. "I ran for weeks, pursued by things too foul to name." "Weeks? But you've only been gone a few days," Tegras said. Gardas closed his eyes, and his body tensed, like that of an animal fearing the lash. The last vestiges of Tegras's bitterness fled as he saw the pain in Gardas's face. "What happened to you, my friend?" he wondered. He made to speak, but Grimm cut him short.
"If you're through getting reacquainted, Tegras, we were discussing matters of import," the Lord Castellant growled.
Tegras glanced at Grimm, a retort on his lips, but kept his mouth shut. Grimm had a sharp tongue, but he had led the Hallowed Knights safely through the innumerable terrors of Rotwater Blight. Tegras remembered Grimm's quiet words of reassurance as the drone of the dirge horn ate away at their courage and sanity. The Lord Castellant had been a rock, immovable and unstoppable. Grimm met his gaze and nodded tersely. Tegras stepped back. Grimm looked at Gardas.
"You spoke of the Hidden Veil, Lord Celestant," he urged.
Tegras blinked. The Hidden Veil? No wonder Grimm was short-tempered. Other Stormcasts had been dispatched to bring Sigmar's offer of alliance to Alariel, the Radiant Queen and Mistress of Gieran, but they had all failed to discover her hiding place. Some had hoped that the appearance of the Sylvaneth Warglades in the final moments of the battle for the Gates of Dawn had signalled some awareness on her part. But others, like Tegras, had suspected that the Treekin had acted on their own initiative. He glanced around, seeking out the mysterious creatures that had escorted Gardas back to them, and was not surprised to find them already gone. The Sylvaneth went where they willed, and no man or beast could stop them. If Gardas had somehow found a way to the Hidden Veil, they could bring Sigmar's words to Alariel. They might even be able to encourage her to rouse herself to fight alongside the Stormcasts in defense of the Jade Kingdoms. Tegras turned his attentions back to the words of his Lord Celestant. Gardas's face had a haunted look, and he was silent for several moments, as if trying to marshal his thoughts. Then, slowly, he began to speak.
"We must first find the Oak of Ages Past," Gardas said, speaking carefully, as might one who was trying to convey something he only barely understood. "Celestial driftwood, cast through the void of time, which came to rest in the misty swamps of this realm. A stream of immaculate water, cleaner than any in the mortal realms, gushes forth from its ancient trunk. It is a river, bestowing life-giving energy to every part of this realm. His voice faded, and he stood silent, as if lost in thought.
"Goddess," Grimm said harshly.
Tegras glared at the Lord Castellant and put his hand on Goddess's shoulder. There was no telling what horrors the steel soul had experienced in his sojourn through Nurgle's garden. Goddess looked at the Prosecutor Prime and nodded his thanks. He cleared his throat and continued his tale.
"While I was elsewhere, I learned that this river, the river Vitalis, has become corrupted. Waters that once carried life now carry only the seeds of death."
"A plague?" Grimm asked.
They had seen similar pestilences far too often since arriving in the realm of life. Nurgle's influence had corrupted the very air itself.
"A demon," Gardas said. "A great unclean one, like the beast I fought at the Gates of Dawn."
He shook his head.
"The servants of Nurgle call it Pupa Grotes, but that is not its true name."
He spoke with an iron certainty.
"I know its name, and we must break its hold over the watercourse if we are to have any hope of finding the hidden veil and its mistress."
He lifted his head.
"We must fight our way to the mouth of the river Vitalis and destroy the demon that festers at its heart."
He looked around, catching the eyes of every man present.
Tegras raised his hammer. "If you so command, Steel Soul, then that is what we shall do."
Grimm had led them well, and he was the reason they had survived to reach this point. But Gardas was their true leader. Grimm grunted and shook his head.
"Lead on, then, Steel Soul. Lead on."
Chapter 7. Ambush on the Fen Road.
"Oh, my boils and scabs,"
Morbidex Twiceborn said, as he cut a coiling forest spite out of the air with his scythe.
"Look at them all, marching in lockstep, so pretty in their shiny armor. What do you think, Chippletongue? Think they'd taste of starlight, my pet?"
he asked the burly Poxmagoth he rode. Chippletongue roared and stamped in reply. The arrayed ranks of Stormcast Eternals, or so they were said to call themselves, marched towards Morbidex's forces through the field of high cairnstones, driving forward in a stoic rhythm. The Nurglings that made up his army, for their part, either hadn't noticed the newcomers or else didn't care. They were too busy fighting the horde of forest spites, and it was such a wonderful ambush as well.
"Took me weeks to get the little fellows to understand what that word meant,"
Morbidex thought, as he snatched a glittering spite out of the air and stuffed it in his mouth. But the spites had ruined it when they'd provoked the Nurglings from concealment and put paid to all of Morbidex's hard effort and planning. Brightly hued and peculiar, the diminutive arboreal spirits had forms ranging from horned serpents to enormous dragonflies that glowed with an inner light, and they fought savagely against the fat-bellied Nurglings. They slashed, clawed, and bit at one another in the mire along the wide sprawl of moss-covered cairnstones that served as Rotwater Blight's only true road, making a loud mess of things. The forest spites might have had the upper hand despite being outnumbered if Morbidex had not joined the fray. Granted, his attack had been made more out of boredom and annoyance than any concern for his Nurglings. The fat little demons could take care of themselves, and they regarded war as play.
"And who am I to ruin their fun, hey?"
Morbidex thought, as he drove his knees into the sides of Chippletongue's skull, turning the beast towards the newcomers.
"Besides which, we've accomplished what we set out to do. Our foes' eyes are on us, even as Grandfather wanted. Up, Chippletongue,"
Morbidex said,
Up, my beauty. Up and at 'em.
The eyeless Magoth gave vent to a burbling warble as it knuckled towards the approaching invaders, scattering spites and nurglings alike.
Lightning men, Torglak calls them,
Morbidex thought, as he hunched forward in his saddle and swung his scythe back.
Fools is what I think. Think they can just roll over Nurgle's own children, don't they? Let's show them what we think of such foolishness.
The Magoth rider roared, as he swung his scythe out in a savage blow towards the vanguard of the newcomers. One of the silver-armoured stormcasts was torn from his feet by the force of the blow and sent flying. Triple Tongue struck out with simian fists, battering others flat, or else rending them crown to gullet. The Nurglings followed, swarming over the warriors. Morbidex bellowed encouragement to his little friends, and smiled in pride every time a stormcast went down, blanketed by squirming, bloated little bodies.
Good! Keep it up, my little friends. Grandfather smiles on us all,
he shouted.
I bet old Blowab and the demon spew wish they were here,
he thought. His fellow Magoth lords were as much lovers of a good brawl as Morbidex himself, one reason among many that he found them such good company. But the best company were his diminutive followers, the Nurglings who had been his closest companions since the day he'd climbed Pox Peak, looking for a way into the grandfather's garden.
Aye, that was a good day, the best day,
he thought, smiling widely. Since his slimy rebirth, he had become more powerful than ever.
And sitting atop you, my beastly beauty, I'm unbeatable,
he said, patting Triple Tongue's head. The Magoth gave a gurgle of pleasure at the gesture. Morbidex laughed and swung his scythe out, catching a stormcast in the back and wrenching the armoured warrior into the air with ease. He eyed his struggling prey for a moment before slinging him over his shoulder.
Take a lot of killing, these fellows,
he thought, as Triple Tongue smashed into another phalanx. These ones were the colour of overripe fruit, rather than gold or silver, but they fought just as hard.
How many of you are there? And how many favours do you come in?
He thought, as he saw a host of winged warriors hurtle towards him. Triple Tongue was surrounded, but Morbidex wasn't unduly concerned. Getting their attention had been the whole point of his little display. The Stormcasts had been making a nuisance of themselves since they'd shattered the Dirgehorn and killed old Gluhak. In the days since the Dirgehorn had fallen silent, the silver-armoured invaders had clashed again and again with Grandfather's children, from running battles with the Skaven to the siege of jolly Slaugoth's Rotfane, even as Torglug had predicted. They'd erased the avian defenders of the Vulturine Geysers, and sent Gutrot Spume's drowned men into flight at the Battle of Kanker Cascade. Slaugoth and Spume were fit to be tied. Their stock with the Glotkin had fallen sharply in the aftermath of their defeats, and new favourites had to be chosen. So this matter had fallen to him. Good old reliable Morbidex. He'd been tasked with pulling the Stormcasts into the swamp and keeping them distracted long enough for... he thought, as the festering swamp on the other side of the Stormcast column began to boil.
That's it. Keep looking at me, me fancy friends. Eyes on old Morbidex. Pay no attention to the fellows rising out of the mud.
Rising from the muck, brackish water sluicing from their twisted frames, came the tallymen of Nurgle. The plague-bearers uttered a monotonous drone, counting the diseases abroad in the swamp as they strode towards their unsuspecting enemies. In their lead was an old friend, the creature known as Wretch Gablar, herald of Nurgle. He glared at the stormcasts with malign intent and whipped one warty hand forward. Plague-bearers loped past him to slam their plague-swords into the backs of the stormcast eternals. Wretch's expression became one of befuddlement when the silver armour remained unmarked where a blow wasn't immediately fatal. Stormcasts who didn't immediately discorporate in a blur of azure energy whirled with a fierce precision to lay their attackers low. Wretch bellowed in frustration as his carefully prepared afflictions failed to take root.
I could have told you that wouldn't work,
Morbidex thought, as he ducked a blow from one of the winged stormcasts. These warriors, wherever they were from, were singularly resistant to the plagues and diseases born in Grandfather's laboratories and gardens. The stuff of them burned too hot for sickness to take hold, Morbidex suspected. Wretch roared and hacked a gap in the stormcast lines. He and his plague-bearers stormed into the midst of the enemy, determined to bury their blades in stormcast flesh.
"Oh, that's the way, Wretch,"
Morbidex shouted.
"That's the way to do it, O herald of fresh woes. Smash these shiny upstarts."
He hefted his scythe and lashed out at one of the winged warriors, who swooped around him like so many stinging insects. He cut the stormcast from the sky and cursed as the warrior dissolved into azure light.
"I hate it when they do that,"
he snarled.
"Not as much as we do, I'd wager, brute," a voice told.
Morbidex twisted in his saddle, searching for the voice's owner. His eyes widened as he caught sight of the winged shape diving towards him on wings of crackling flame.
"Oh, Bubos,"
Morbidex said, moments before the warrior swooped past him. The stormcast lashed out with a hammer as he hurtled past and caught Morbidex in the face with a thunderous boom. The force of the blow catapulted the twice-born from his saddle. He hit the marshy ground with a splash. Every bone in his face felt as if it had been splintered, and he groaned as he rolled over. Triple Tongue shrieked and reared up, pawing blindly at the swarm of winged killers. Without Morbidex's guidance, the beast was reacting on instinct. Morbidex pushed himself awkwardly to his feet. He'd lost his scythe in the fall, and he stumbled back as the warrior who'd struck him landed nearby. Lightning crackled across the stormcast's limbs. Eyes the colour of the unclouded skies stared at Morbidex from behind the two perfect features of the silver mask. He held two hammers, the heads of which were wreathed in energy. Morbidex flexed his thick fingers.
"Well, come on then, Silverback,"
he gurgled, setting his feet.
"You caught me by surprise once, but you not do so twice, or my name isn't Morbidex Twiceborn."
The warrior shot forward, quicker than Morbidex's eyes could follow. One hammer crashed into his chest, and a blow from the second snapped his head to the side. Morbidex fell onto his back, wheezing for breath.
"Ow! Fine, fine! Best two out of three,"
he groaned as he rolled onto his belly. He shook his head, trying to clear it. The stormcast dived forward again, intent on finishing the job. Morbidex twisted aside and clamped a hand down on the back of the warrior's crested helm. With a roar, he cut short the stormcast's flight and flung him down. Morbidex stomped down, but his opponent rolled aside. One wing snapped out, and the crackling feathers gave Morbidex's belly a searing kiss. He staggered back, hands clamped to his burned and ruptured gut. The stormcast pushed himself to his feet. Morbidex grinned at him.
"Didn't like that, did you? Faster than I look, aren't I?"
he chortled. He looked down at his wound and gingerly took his hands away. Bloated entrails pressed against the blackened flesh, and he gave a grunt of consternation.
"I'm going to twist your head off for that one, friend."
The stormcast sprang forward, and his hammers snapped out. Morbidex caught one on his palm, but the second smashed into his shoulder. He roared and slugged his foe, denting his silvery helm. A wing flared out and blinded Morbidex. He clawed at his eyes, cursing virulently. Hammer blows rained down, striking his head, shoulders, arms, and back. Morbidex sank to one knee, ears ringing. He'd never been hit so hard or so fast. The stormcast was fast, faster than any creature that Morbidex had ever had the pleasure of fighting. But speed wasn't the sole route to victory. Morbidex dug his hand into the muck as he bent forward, and, with a wild howl, hurled a gobbet of mud into the stormcast's face. The warrior avoided the improvised missile, as Morbidex had known he would, and stepped within reach of his opponent. The Magoth Lord gave a shout and lunged, arms spread wide. The stormcast pivoted, hammers raised, but this time Morbidex was ready. He caught the warrior's wrists and prevented the blows from landing. The two strained against one another, their feet sliding back and forth through the muck. Morbidex grinned down at his opponent.
I've introduced myself. It's only polite you do the same,
he said.
My name is Tegras, monster. Treasure it. It's the last name you'll ever hear,
the Stormcast growled. Morbidex laughed. He was still laughing when Tegras abruptly fell backwards and pulled the Maggoth Lord off his feet. He bellowed in shock as Tegras's boots slammed into his wounded belly. Morbidex rolled onto his back, but too slowly. Tegras dropped towards him, hammers raised, and the Maggoth Lord squeezed his eyes shut, waiting for the impact. However, rather than the pain he'd been expecting, he felt a wash of hot, foul air and heard a familiar, guttural roar. He cracked an eye open and saw Tegras flying backwards. A shadow fell over him, and he looked up, a smile spreading across his wide, green face.
Oh, Triple Tongue, my beauty, just in time,
he rumbled, as the Maggoth bent towards him, its teeth clicking in concern. It snuffled worriedly at him as he got to his feet, and he patted its scaly skull.
Who's a sweet brute, eh?
Morbidex said, as he hauled himself back into the saddle. As Triple Tongue rose to its full height, Morbidex took in the battlefield at a glance. What he saw wasn't good. Wretch's ambush had gone sour, and the Stormcasts were counter-attacking, led by a figure who blazed with holy light. Morbidex shaded his eyes and peered at the figure.
That's the one old Bolifax was after,
he thought doubtfully. As he watched, nurgling swarms were crushed underfoot. Hammers fell, horned heads burst, and Nurgle's tallymen reeled. Wretch bellowed a command, and the remaining plague-bearers belly-flopped into the swamp, digging into the muck and disappearing from sight.
Well, that tears it,
Morbidex murmured as he sat up in his saddle. He slapped Triple Tongue on the head.
Time to go, my lad.
The Maggoth rumbled assent and turned, smashing a tree out of its path as it dived deeper into the swamp, moving as quickly as its thick legs could carry him. No sense remaining to fight all on his lonesome. Grandfather didn't favour fools, despite his sentimentality. He hunched forward in his saddle, urging his mount to greater speed.
Have to fall back. Get to the jellied gush and make a final stand,
Morbidex thought. That was where they were going. It was the only place of value in the immediate vicinity. He twitched his head abruptly, trying to dislodge the flies that were gathering about his face. Wait. Flies? His eyes widened as the flies suddenly rose from his flesh and swirled about in a cloud, coalescing into a familiar face.
Going somewhere, Twiceborn?
Ethrak Glott asked, in a voice made from the droning of 100 flies.
I could have sworn we asked you to handle these invaders.
Our ambush was ambushed,
Morbidex said unapologetically.
Forest fights got the Nurglings all riled up. The Stormcasts interrupted a very satisfying drubbing, if you want my opinion.
Did I ask for it?
Well, no.
Then what makes you think I would?
A sense of unbridled optimism,
Morbidex said. He glanced over his shoulder but saw nothing. No pursuit appeared to be forthcoming.
What now, Glott?
Bloem rot-spawned and Orcot's demon spew and making for the jellied gush. Join them, Twiceborn,
Ethrak hissed.
It is time for Grandfather Nurgle's children to go to war.
Chapter 8 The Ruins of Arboria. Lord Celestant Gardas pushed through the Vale of Vines and gazed at the faded glory of the fallen city of Arboria. The treetop city was a thing of flowing curves and soft angles, of great stones held aloft by the thick branches and boles of an immense elder tree, perhaps grown from a seed of the Oak of Ages Past itself. The latter was visible in the distance, its broken shape jutting across the pale green sky. He could just make out the pale swathe of foulness that was their destination on the horizon. He repressed a shudder as he stared at that foulness.
Help us, Caradan. Help us,
the ghosts murmured in the back of his head. They had been whispering to him since he had reeled out of that mad garden and back into the mortal realms, aflame with white fire. They had clung to him like the tatters of his war cloak, as he had waded into the fray between the Sylvaneth and the Skaven in the glade of horned growths. He had instinctively sought out his foes, and ruined any who sought to bar his path, seeking not Ratkin but the barbarians who had murdered the man he had been, in another time, another place.
Help us, Caradan. Help us.
Quiet.
He squeezed his eyes shut, forcing the voices back into the cage of his memories. When they had at last fallen silent, he strode forward, following the scampering forms of the forest spites the Stormcasts had rescued from Nurgle's followers a few days before. The colourful spirits swirled about him for a moment, clicking and murmuring in their strange tongue, before they faded like reflections on water. Where they went, he could not say, and did not like to guess.
"Thank you,"
he called out. The spites had led their Stormcast allies to Arboria by secret paths only they knew, and Gardas was grateful to them. It had been the first time in many days that the Stormcasts had been able to travel without fear of attack or ambush, and such a respite had been much needed, though it would be brief. Even Sigmar's chosen warriors required rest, and Rotwater Blight had more dangers than just those that came armed with swords and axes. The servants of the ruinous powers were many and varied, and the Hallowed Knights and their allies had fought for every patch of ground between profane Tor and here. He looked about in wonder. What stories were in these stones, he wondered, tracing the faded features of a vine-shrouded statue as he looked around the vast plaza he had wandered into. What folk had built this city? What had happened to them? Where were they now? He closed his eyes, suddenly recalling the guttural laughter of the demon Bolothrax and the nightmare pursuit through the Garden of Nurgle. He knew what happened to the people of Arboria, as surely as he knew what had happened to his own folk before Sigmar had claimed him.
Caradan, help us.
Weathered stone and withered vine crumbled beneath his fingers. Gardas opened his eyes and took his hand away from the statue.
No more,
he said hoarsely.
Never again.
Gardas,
a harsh voice said from behind him. He turned and saw Lord Castellant Grimm stalking towards him, his griffhound padding at his side, his lantern glowing with a soft, warming light.
Are you ill?
Gardas smiled thinly. You sound almost concerned.
I would not have asked if I wasn't, Grimm said. You have been through much.
Gardas said nothing for a moment as he marshalled his thoughts. He wanted to tell Grimm what he had seen in Nurgle's grim garden. Even now, safely returned to the mortal realms, he could not cleanse himself of the stink of that place. It ate away at him, mind, body, and soul. His armour was clean, but sometimes he could not help but see filth, a slow, creeping mould, insidious and inexorable. Idly, he scraped at his chest.
I am fine, Loras.
As they had traversed Rotwater Blight, Gardas had sent his prosecutors winging ahead to scout out the lay of the land. They had brought back word of the great hollow trunk of the Oak of Ages Past, rising up from the horizon, and Arboria smouldering in its shadow. Two, Tegras had spied a number of strange floating islands, their snow-capped peaks crowned by ugly green clouds. Gardas shook his head.
Tegras!
He called out to one of the winged shapes flying through the upper reaches of the city above.
Is this the place?
This is the city I saw, my lord, Tegras said, as he dropped to the ground.
His wings blazed once, stirring dust and pollen, and then folded behind his back.
We sit in the very shadow of the Oak of Ages Past. He extended his hammer to the northeast. And there, the river's source. We're close, Gardas.
Lord Castellant Grimm grunted.
It seems those forest spites did not play us false.
Why would they? Gardas asked.
It's in their best interest to aid us.
He looked at Grimm,
Or do you still not trust them, Loras?
I trust nothing in this realm, Grim said, one eyebrow raised.
Nor should you guard us. We are strangers here, however much blood we've shed. The Sylvaneth are allies of moment, nothing more. Who knows what goes through the heads of creatures like that?
I know, Gardas said softly. They could have killed me, Loras. Instead, they brought me back. They told me of this city and the islands in the sky. We are their best hope of awakening Alariel to the danger she is in. The talons of the plague gods seek her heart, and they close about her even now. We must get to her first, to put ourselves between her and her enemies. That is why we are here, my friend.
Yes, to take control of the realm gates in Sigmar's name, Grim said. Why must we...
He fell silent and turned away. Gardas called after him, but the Lord Castellant walked away, bellowing orders to a phalanx of nearby liberators. As pleasant as ever, Tegras murmured.
He's worried.
We are all worried. It has been a hard path to walk, and we have shed much blood in the name of something I saw in a mad realm, Gardas said. They had done much good along the way, or so he hoped. They had torn down the vile redoubts of Nurgle's champions, and slain many a corrupted warrior on their trek across the Blight. But they had not been able to continue to follow the river. To tarry too long in the vicinity of such a corrupted body of water was dangerous, even to Stormcast Eternals. They'd had to find a safer way to the river's source, and a quicker one. When the Forest Spites had offered to lead them by hidden paths to Arboria, Gardas had quickly accepted, despite Grimm's misgivings. He looked up at the trunk of the immense elder tree which stretched far above the city, piercing the very clouds themselves.
"Are they up there, then?" he asked Tegras. "The floating islands you saw?"
"Aye, far above," Tegras said. "It'll be quite the climb for those of you without wings." Gardas laughed.
"We've climbed worse.
Remember the star heights of Azir? At least this time we won't have enemies hurling fire and spears down on us as we climb."
"As far as we know," Tegras said. He looked up. "I will take my prosecutors and make sure your route is a safe one. Do not doubt yourself, Steel Soul. We believe in you. All of us." Then, without waiting for a reply, he leapt into the air and was gone, speeding towards the dark clouds above. Gardas watched Tegras go until he lost sight of him. He turned as someone placed a hand on his shoulder.
"Morbus," he said, recognizing the chill of the other Stormcast's presence.
"Grim is worried," the Lord Relictor intoned.
"As are you, I expect," Gardas said.
"No,"
Morbus said.
"I do not worry, Gardas. I merely observe."
"Maybe he's right to be worried," Gardas said, looking up at the tree. Morbus laughed softly.
"Grim is stone. He is Sigmarite, hard and unyielding. He will break before he bends, and calls it strength. But you..."
"Bend?" Gardas supplied. Morbus nodded.
"Yes, you bend. You adapt. You persevere. That is why Sigmar chose you as his sword, Gardas. You do what must be done, rather than what you have been ordered to do."
"So would Grim, if he had seen..." Gardas began.
Morbus cut him off with a sharp gesture.
"Grim would never have come out of Nurgle's garden alive. He would have fought and died."
The Lord Relictor hesitated.
"Nonetheless, sometimes he is right. I have seen things, Gardas. I have seen death and damnation, and I would not see it come to pass."
"Whose death?"
Gardas asked, mouth suddenly dry. "Whose damnation?" Morbus was silent. Gardas looked away. He shook himself.
"Only the faithful," he thought.
"We must climb, Morbus," he said. "We have a way to go, and little time."
He looked at the Lord Relictor. Gather the others, my fellow Lord Celestants included. We must reach the Sky Islands floating above.
And then what? Morbus said.
Gardas hesitated.
I will know when I get up there.
He clenched his fists. He could sense Morbus's concern. Before the other Stormcast could speak, he continued on, his words coming in a rush. I am being driven by something I cannot define, Morbus. A vague certainty compels me. Fragments of knowledge, stolen as I fled through ruined worlds, snatches of things seen at a remove of centuries. The whispers of the Silverneth as they bore me to safety. He shook his head. They, and perhaps even Gairon itself, want Alariel found, Lord Relictor. They want her to know, to see what has become of the world she has shrunk from. Once she sees, she will fight. Gairon will fight. The Jade Kingdoms will rise, and all of this will not have been for nothing. He looked at Morbus. But we must find her first. Morbus was silent for a moment. Then he nodded.
We must climb, he said.
Chapter 9. The Floating Islands. Loras Grimm slammed the edge of his halberd into the bark of a titanic tree. Talon chirped from his perch. The Griffhound lay across the Lord Castellan's chest, held fast by Hope and a sling made from Grimm's cloak.
Easy, boy. Almost there,
Grimm muttered, as Talon's beak rubbed against the underside of his war helm. The animal was worried, as he should be. Though they had the heads of eagles, Griffhounds lacked the bird's wings or ease with heights.
Almost there, my friend.
He dug his fingers into the ridges of the bark and tore his halberd free.
Almost there. This is the sheerest folly, he thought, as he paused for breath.
He chanced to look back at the way he'd come. Below him, figures in silver, amethyst, and gold swarmed up the trunk of the vast tree like insects. Further below them, the crumbled city of Arborea was but a series of pale indentations in the all-pervasive mist. It had taken them hours to climb to the uppermost boughs of the great tree, moving so slowly that Grimm feared the war for the Jade Kingdoms would be over before they reached the top. One missed step, one loosed hold would be fatal. Already several Stormcasts had perished, falling to their deaths far below as the great tree swayed and shifted on its roots. He twisted his head upwards. Gardas clung to the topmost bough of the tree, staring out over the horizon as if lost in thought. He'd hoped Gardas's return meant that things would proceed as Sigmar had decreed. Instead, they had travelled halfway across Rotwater Blight to fight battles they were not prepared for, all in the name of a vision that Gardas had experienced while lost in a demon realm. Grimm shook his head. When Morbus had first told him of his dreams, he'd wanted to act, to save Gardas from the fate that awaited him. Gardas was a brother Stormcast, chosen by Sigmar and worthy of Grimm's concern. But this venture seemed doomed to failure. Others had searched for the Radiant Queen, but had found no sign of her. If Sigmar's own hunters had turned up no sign of their quarry, who could hope to find her?
Only the faithful.
Grimm looked up. Gardas's voice was soft, but it carried far. It was no parade ground bellow, but rather the quiet rumble of a Drakoth. Gardas was not looking at him. Instead, the Lord Celestant tensed, and then, before Grimm could stop him, he flung himself into the mist that obscured the air around them. Grimm hesitated. He'd known this was coming. It was the only way to reach the floating islands that Tegras said were hovering somewhere out there. He heard a scrape of metal, and saw Lord Relictor Morbus do the same, reliquary staff in hand. He watched the other Stormcasts vanish, and gritted his teeth.
What sort of madman flings himself blindly into the void? He thought angrily.
Talon chirruped, and Grimm looked down at the Griffhound. He smiled thinly.
Yes, I know. Only the faithful.
Then, Wrapping one arm protectively about the animal, he shoved himself away from the trunk of the leviathan tree and plummeted into the swirling mist. A second of weightlessness stretched out, before ending abruptly in a soft landing on the loam of the floating isle. He felt rocks and roots crumble beneath his weight, and Talon gave a startled screech as Grim began to slide down an incline of spongy vegetation. He twisted about and saw, through the thinning mist, a jagged precipice. Grim cursed and tried to hook his halberd into something solid, but to no avail. His stomach lurched.
"Goddess!"
he shouted, and his slide was brought to an abrupt halt as an iron grip caught hold of the haft of his halberd. Grim looked up into the eyes of the Lord Celestant. Gardas, hammer hooked in the loam of the island, dragged Grim back up with his free hand.
"Have no fear, Loras.
I will not let you fall," Gardas said.
Grim said nothing as he caught hold of a thick net of roots and began to push himself up towards his fellow Stormcast. Morbus appeared above him and reached out a hand. Grim took the Lord Relictor's aid gladly, and soon found himself kneeling on relatively solid ground. He looked about, heart thudding in his chest. More Stormcasts appeared, dropping through the mist to fall onto the island's mossy scree. From the look of it, almost all of their warriors had made it. He could see Zavaclius and Ultrades and their men as well.
"Integrus wasn't playing the fool after all," he said,
fighting to keep all sign of the fear he'd felt out of his voice. "No, he wasn't," Gardas said. He spread his arms. "Behold, the lost island of Talbion." Grim looked at Morbus, who